This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Welcome back to Talkin' Shit, where we are talking all sorts of shit. Schitt's Creek, that is. Today, we are talking about Schitt's Creek Season 5, Episode 1, The Crowning. And of course, as always, I am joined by someone who would miss me so terribly if I were to go away for a long time that maybe he'd just do a ton more work. Stuart, how
are you? I probably would get a lot more work done in my life. when I'm not just being interrupted with all caps messages that always start, Stuart! And yeah. I'm like, Jessica, what? And
then, do they have this in Britain?
Yeah, do they have this in Britain? What do you call this?
That's 90% of the messages I send you.
It really is. That or you recommending me shows, which is never not appreciated.
Recommending is such a kind word for it, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, what's the actual word? I mean, really, like,
bullying,
it's not even
people
evangelism,
into watching
it's
shows
bullying.
I like.
Yeah, it's just full on
yeah,
bullying, right?
If you're my friend and there's something that you have not seen that I just simply need you to have seen, I will not stop. I'm relentless. You will watch the thing I want you to watch.
Yeah. And then probably podcast about it with you as well. Hi.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is I give good recommendations. I don't know that I've ever had someone come back to me and be like, oh, why did you show me that? Like, it was bad. Mm-hmm. I hated it. Like, that just simply doesn't happen to me. It's always like, You were so right. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
You tend to be really kind of good on like being honest with reviews when you're not feeling something. Just going, I'm like, would you recommend it? No. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll never watch that then. Not worth it.
Because when I do like something, I will not stop talking about it ever.
Yeah.
Ever. So on that note, go watch Yellow Jackets because season 3 has been incredible. If you're just walking in here for the first time. But yeah, don't forget to subscribe. Talking Shit everywhere. Talking Shit on YouTube. We're slowly getting up closer to 200 subscribers. So just keep on going with that. We love it. We appreciate it.
We're getting there. We're going to have to really start thinking about stuff.
But I know. We're going to seriously have to start. But first, let's talk about the crowning. Stuart, I want to know your broad thoughts before we do the recap of the episode.
Bonkers. Finally, so happy to actually understand what the hell that outfit was, because I'd seen the crowning outfit, like I'd seen the like scientist jacket with all the feathers and obviously the kind of like the prosthetics and stuff, but I had no context for what it was until, of course, very early on when we got kind of like the Crows Have Eyes script coming through, and I kind of was keeping that in the back of my mind. I was like, well, that's surely turning up again. Mm-hmm. I thought it might have been like an end of series kind of thing.
Oh, like this is what Moira is now doing with her life.
Yeah. Like, I don't know whether it was like post Schitt's Creek hits, like what she's gone to this like avant-garde film like scene or something of that, of like really kind of cringe films that are actually kind of good. But then when we got obviously the episode title for this, I was like, well, it's got to be that. It's got to be that. Mm-hmm. And it was so much better than I thought it would be. It's so ridiculous. Yeah.
That's the best part about the potential of you being spoiled on anything Schitt's Creek. It really doesn't take away from the magic of when this stuff actually happens. So even if you saw Moira in her little bird outfit, her doctor scientist crow person outfit, it still doesn't ruin the actual scenes because of the way that Catherine O'Hara plays Moira playing this character. It's just unhinged. I'm so happy to be back talking about Schitt's Creek. It was really tough to have like that 1 week of the wrap up. Not that I don't enjoy the wrap up, but like to not talk about a new episode. It's like,
yeah,
we're back.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult for you, Jess, isn't it? Not being able to talk about it. Meanwhile, I'm here waiting 2 weeks to watch the next episode. Two the longest weeks of my life. Uh-huh. And I've had to go through it 5 times now.
Yeah. Yeah. How is it doing math on a podcast? It's tough, isn't it?
Shut up. It will be five times. It will be 5 times. Leave me alone.
All right. Well, let's get into our episode recap here and talk about exactly what happens in this episode, because we're back, baby. Moira is in Bosnia filming for The Crows Have Eyes 3, The Crowning, which she sees as her next big comeback. Unfortunately, the director, just named Blair, like Beyonce, sees the project as kind of a schlock. He's just working to pay for his next vacation. Moira, with some advice from Johnny, makes the best out of a bad situation and leans in, making script modifications and owning that role. And Blair seems really impressed with her, which is just so exciting for Moira. Meanwhile, Johnny struggles with missing Moira and uses his free time to work himself to the bone, which pisses off Roland and Stevie in the process, because Roland doesn't have anything to do. And it turns out this is the longest him and Moira have actually been apart, and that is the most adorable thing of all time. Elsewhere, Alexis gets under David's skin by insinuating that while his relationship with Patrick is old and boring, her new relationship with Ted is spicy and adventurous. They go on a double date to an adventure park where David's aversion to heights, he's not afraid, it's just an aversion, is tested. Mm-hmm. Turns out Alexis lied, and the test from the old magazine was rigged for failure. And that's what's new in Schitt's Creek, Stuart.
Such a great episode. Like, some of the season openers have been a bit shaky. This one hit on all fronts, I thought. And especially, like, I did the face just a moment ago. The Alexis face when she reveals that she lied was the funniest thing I've seen in a long time. Like, I don't know why it is. Annie Murphy pulling that face is just, it's just awkward. It's too funny to me. I could watch that on loop. Combined obviously with the puns from Ted, I'm like, yes, this is why I was rooting for the relationship, because I wanted to see more of them two together being dorky.
Yes, fair, but also because we're already let's dive right into the Alexis and Ted and double date storyline, if you will. What Alexis does is like,
someone's not a fan.
I'm so sorry. My dogs are acting up today, so if you hear them in the background, I really apologize. I'm doing my...
Oh, oh.
You better stop that right now, Goose. You're in so much trouble. So, Alexis... I'm going to let him out. So what Alexis does is just so supremely cruel to David, and that not only does she make him think, like, make him question his own relationship with this, like, magazine from the 90s, but on top of that, she forgets he's afraid of heights and invites him, kind of just manipulates him into going to this adventure park. So he's losing on all fronts, Stuart. He thinks that his relationship has staled, and also he's terrified of heights while this is all going on.
I mean, surely David should have seen this coming. Like, he's had ample time to know when Alexis is pulling a fast one, right? Like, you'd expect that he should be able to, like, pick this up. Especially considering, like, should have more confidence in himself. He knew, he knew that there was only one answer to that quiz, and it was rigged, because he did it twice. He did it twice, and he should be more confident in his relationship. I don't want to blame Alexis entirely for this.
See, I will. Mostly because
I don't know. Maybe I'm just riding the high of, like, having Ted and Alexis, like, together. I don't know.
Yeah, but
it was just kind of like, you know that there's nothing wrong in their relationship. Like,
is David feels like, okay, well, we're not, and this is a very common thing. I like the way the show played on the trope of, we have the old tired couple who's been together for a little bit, and, like, the new couple who's in the honeymoon phase, right? We've seen that a lot on TV, but the way they played with this, we're like, no, David and Patrick are actually very happy in the way their relationship is. It's Alexis poking at it that makes David question whether he should be happy. So I like how it turned out, where it's David and Patrick are perfectly fine. We don't have to be worried about their relationship. Like, they like doing the data inventory or whatever the hell it is that they have to do at the store. They like the boring aspects of their, you know, boring aspects of their relationship. Mm-hmm. I really liked that, Stuart, because I'm also someone who just likes to be comfortable in, like, my I don't need to go to adventure parks. Like, I'm cool being a homebody and chilling and watching TV and playing Baldur's Gate, you know?
You don't need to tackle the high ropes? Like, you don't want to, like, go adventuring?
What? I absolutely do not want to do this. This looks horrible. I'm not even afraid of heights, and it doesn't look fun. What is – tell me how going high up into the air and walking across ropes, like, when you frame it that way, it doesn't sound fun at all.
No. Like, you get the promise of a zip wire at the end of it, I'm guessing. I mean, that's when I've done
this. I've been on a zip line. It's not that fun.
Yeah, they're not as like,
they look more fun than they are.
They're fun for like the first couple of seconds, and then you realize, oh, okay, there's a bit more to this. All right.
It's just, it's not super fun. So yeah, no, I'm definitely, I'm in the Patrick and David camp. That's my camp. I'm not the Alexis and Ted camp, especially Stuart. Let me tell you. Yeah, I've never been so anti Ted and Alexis, I think, which is very funny considering they literally just got together. I hate the, like, good job, babe. You got it, babe.
Babe, ugh, look at me, babe.
Look and at then me, the babe.
Wave. It was horrid.
I hate it. I hate pet names. I've talked about this on probably every single podcast I've ever been on. Can't do pet names. Can't do babes. Left and right. And then, like, the smack on the tush. Like, it's all just so extra. And what it reads to me, Stuart, and I know this isn't the case because we love Ted and Alexis. We're finally here. You know, they're finally together. But it always reads to me when couples are, like, overly, you know, pet naming, overly PDA, just like overly everything in a public setting, it always reads as like insecurity to me, even though I know that may not be what it is.
No, I don't think it's necessarily always what it is, but I think there kind of is a little bit of performance here, because I do think that, like, they're going up against David and Patrick, and David and Patrick are, like, at least in the show, established. Like, it still feels fresh to me. I'm like, oh, I feel like they just got together recently. It hasn't been that long. But, yeah, like, they are going up against a more solid couple almost. And so there is that kind of, like, well, we're on a honeymoon. We're the new couple. We've got to amp it up a little bit to compete almost, even though it shouldn't be a competition. But I think absolutely the sibling rivalry certainly does turn it into one, like, somehow. I'm just surprised that Ted is being a bit of a doofus in this whole situation as well. Like, yeah, we got puns. Like, we hope we didn't rope you into this. Like, very good, Ted. Very good.
Yeah.
But it's very un-Ted-like to not really see that David is struggling. really struggling.
And I did appreciate at the very least that, you know, Alexis forgot about the whole situation with David and Heights.
Yeah.
And when she does remember, she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Like, she actually does seem like a little bit apologetic about the fact that she roped David into this. So at least there's that. But yeah, I really was not impressed with Alexis and mostly Alexis, not really Ted. Ted was kind of an innocent bystander, but like, just... The babes. It's like, it pushed it over the edge for me, Stuart. I know people love their pet names, and that's fine. I always cringe. I can't help it. I don't know where in me this is rooted, Stuart. Like, I truly don't know where this, like, what is my trauma that this is where I get, like, the most cringy and annoyed with characters. I don't know what it is. I really can't stand pet names. Maybe part of it is, like, I have a name. Like, just use my name. Like,
yeah,
you know, like, babe feels so interchangeable to me. Like, anybody could be babe.
I wonder if it's one of those things for someone that, like, commonly says the wrong name. And so it's, like, to avoid that, maybe. Of just,
yeah,
like,
right?
Like, if you always call them babe, then you're never going to say, like, the ex's name or...
Yeah.
Do that really awful thing where you refer to, like, your teacher as mum or something.
Oh, no.
Cringe.
I just felt the cringe in my body so deeply when you did that. No. Yeah. No.
It's awful.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what it is, but I just can't get on board with the babing of it all. And they're like, babe, look at me. Like, stop it. Stop it. You're adults. Stop it.
See, I was totally not there for the whole babe, that kind of thing. But when she tried to get David's attention, it's like, David, and then just wave, and then David's struggling. I was so funny.
Yeah. We also get the really famous David eat glass gif this episode, which I really love. Eat glass is just so good. Yeah, but this test turning out to be rigged was really funny because, Stuart, I don't know about you, but I took many a magazine quiz in my teen years, and it's so easy to game them. Usually, apparently, whatever this magazine is not very good, but you could really game the system in those quizzes.
I can't say that I ever did any of those like old teen magazine quizzes. Wasn't really my vibe. However, I am a millennial, of course. I BuzzFeed. Of course, I found out what
everyone has,
or what kind of like topping I would be best on toast, like all those stupid random things. You know exactly what you're like clicking and going to get the answer to, which is again another thing of like why I'm like a bit like almost. I mean, Alexis's camp, because I'm like, David, you should see through this. You should be smarter than this, David. You can do so much better for yourself.
Yeah.
And especially, why is David reading M'lady magazine? I don't care if he's like, oh, it's Major Lady, whatever it is. It's M'lady magazine. I saw the logo. Like, what the hell is he doing from 1992?
He really needs to like go to the library. Like, there's so many books you can be reading. Why are you reading M'lady magazine?
Oh my
M'lady.
God.
Yeah, truly awful. But I'm really happy that at the end of the day, that both couples are like, you know what, we're different sorts of couples, and that's fine. And they get David across that stupid obstacle. What about this is fun? Someone explain it to me. I don't understand. Let's make it really difficult for someone to walk a straight line, also be really high up in the air.
See, I was debating whether or not to say this. So I went on one of these high rope things for a friend's stag party, and I injured myself while doing it. Because
there you
we
go.
Had to like we like took a swing of a rope into like one of those like climbing net things, and as I went into it, I reached out for it, misjudged it, and my hand just went and proper bent back away it shouldn't have bent, and I like tore. I think it was like a ligament or something.
Oh no.
And I was like that. And I was just like, ow, ow, ow. Now I have to climb this one-handed.
And
fantastic.
And you know what? You're paying to do all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm paying to get injured. I'm paying to not have fun. Like, maybe I'm just a Debbie Downer. I don't know. But this all just seems like garbage to me. This is nothing I want to do. I don't want to do any of this.
Just
I
activities?
Had
to... No, none of them.
Let's
just
not
never go
them.
Outside. No.
I think
such an indoors kid.
It's not even that, because I do like being outside. It's just I'm not sporty, so I don't find those things fun. Like when I used to work for an old job I had, it was very much like the company was based in Vermont. And so this is going to mean nothing to most people, but like Vermont is like it's like an outdoorsy state. Like everyone hikes, everyone bikes, everyone skis, everyone does all of these outdoor kid things.
Well, there's a lot of hills, and you're a flatlander, right?
Stop it. That, New York has so
that's a good
mountains.
Reference, right? That's a good reference that no listeners will get.
And listeners will get. But the problem was that, like, as, like, a team-building thing, they're like, oh, we're going to go to kind of a similar idea to, like, an adventure park. It wasn't just, like, ropes and obstacle courses, but, like, it was all, like, there was zip lining. There was, like, these little mountain coasters. Those were actually pretty fun. But like all this sorts of stuff. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to do this. Like, we can't just like go get drinks somewhere. Like, that's like a normal team.
I mean, and that's, I think the most effective form of like team building. Like we had, I think I talked about this recently where we had this like weird speed dating thing where we had, like had to talk to like our new colleagues and things. And it was a bit cringe and stuff. After that, we also had a game show, which was like took 2 hours, and it was ripping off all of these British game shows that we got to go up and press buzzers for and stuff like that. At not one point did we really talk to each other. Whereas
the building? Where's the building of the team?
Exactly. It's just people showing off about how knowledgeable they are. And it's like, I really tried not to because I was like, I get competitive for this shit. So I was like, I'm not going up.
Yes!
I'm not doing that because people are going to see the worst of me.
Thank you. That is the other problem with these like team building activities is if you make it competitive, no one's going to be happy because mm-hmm. My competitive side will automatically engage. It's not anything I can help. And I'm going to want to stomp everybody. And you know what is not fun is losing. Okay. Losing is the exact opposite of fun. And another team building thing that I had to do once upon a time, we went bowling, which actually was very fun. I used to bowl a lot when I was younger. Too bad.
It's an opportunity to chat. And like,
you can have drinks.
It's something that everyone is reasonably okay at, right?
There were a lot of really bad bowlers. But the thing is, it's like I'm decently good at bowling. So I got very good. So of course I started like shit talking my boss because what else are you to do?
Wow.
But it was fine. He was a douche. It's fine. Whatever. Anyway, this obstacle course thing though, not for me.
Not it at all. Yeah.
Not for me.
Not it for couples, not it for team building, not it for stag dudes. Just don't do it.
Just stop.
Trees are for birds. Don't invade their environment. Just stick to your own. Stick to the ground.
Yeah. All I want is to like hear some gossip, have a few drinks, hang out. That's what generally I want to do if I'm hanging out with people. Leave the adventure time for someone else. That's where I land.
All the adventurous listeners have just absolutely bailed for this now.
You know what? That's
fine. If you're listening to this on a hike or high ropes, more power to you.
If you're on a hike, I don't believe you. How about that?
Yeah.
You're on a hike, you're not actually on a hike.
Yeah, send proof. Proof.
Yeah,
prove it.
Give me proof. Okay, let's talk about Johnny and his time without Moira.
Do we have to?
Why are you doing
it? You know what?
You tell me your qualms with Johnny this episode.
Okay. As per usual with Johnny, he did a very sweet thing at the end. Of course, he turns it around because that is what Johnny is gonna do. Answer the freaking phone, Johnny. It was so annoying. And how does he not know how to do speakerphone? It's one button. It's one button, Johnny. There's only so much boomer behavior I can tolerate. And I can't deal with this. I don't know how to program my phone. Like, use it.
Yeah.
All the time. Like, all boomers out there. You know how to play Bejeweled or whatever it is, or the Facebook Farmvilles and things like that, but somehow you don't know how to put your phone on speakerphone. Nah, I'm not having it, buddy. Just answer the freaking phone.
I love that this isn't even what I thought your like biggest issue would be.
No, just the opening scene. That's all I'm angry about.
So used to him like not knowing how to use technology that it really doesn't bother me anymore. I don't know. I feel bad for the guy. I really do. Here's the thing. He feels a little lost. And you know where my sympathy comes from, Stuart? It's the line where Moira says, "Oh, you know, I left you that Sudoku book because I know how you get when I'm away."
It's ridiculous.
I just felt bad for him.
I mean, yeah, okay. It's kind of like his whole situation. It's you do want to feel bad for him. 8 days, the longest time they've ever been apart.
Wanna feel bad for him, aka I don't, but some people might.
I mean, like, I feel like you should. The writing is setting up that you should. Do I? No. Because I'm like, Johnny. You're an independent man, like, and you do things around the motel that isn't Roland's job. Like, there's so much more that can be done while also not stepping on Roland's feet. And also, just not reading the room of, like, what Stevie and Roland are getting at. Like, buddy, you're going to put someone out of work, someone that is, like, having to pay for a newborn. Like, calm it down. Just calm it down, Johnny.
Yeah.
Stop being so needy.
I don't know, because it's funny, because I think in most situations, I would be where you are. Like, I would be annoyed. This is, like, overly emotional, overly sentimental, like, bunch of garbage, right? Like, mm-hmm. Your wife leaves for a few days. Like, calm down, Johnny. But the problem is, it's Johnny, and he's such a little sad sack, and it makes me so sad when he's like, "Oh, miss you too," and she's, like, already hung up the phone. Like, he struggles, and I think I like that because that feels real to me. Like, it feels like there are people in the world who would struggle if their spouse left for like a few weeks, and it just is sad. He misses her, he loves her, maybe because it's Johnny. I just have a little bit of a soft spot for him.
I don't know. It's just screaming to me of this like useless husband syndrome of like, you know, in like The Simpsons where Marge goes away and like Homer has to fend for like Bart and stuff like that. And the house is a mess, doesn't know what the Kirk is, like everything goes bad. It's that kind of vibe I'm getting. It's just that without Moira, and this isn't that Moira is the competent one in their relationship, but it's like, it just gives me that vibe of just, well, without them, I'm lost. And yeah, okay, I guess it's kind of sweet. Oh, she completes him. Oh, how adorable. But I'm like, dude, you were a former CEO of a massive business. Why are you so incompetent to live on your own for like a bit? For 8 days as well. Like, come on. I can understand being bored. But just, I it's the way in which he just picks the wrong things to deal with. And like, it's just, it's just willful, I think, almost like, look at me. My wife's away and I miss her. Look at this lovely gesture I'm doing.
It's
tantamount to the whole babe situation. It's like such performative relationship. Like, I can't deal with that.
See, I totally view it differently because I think, I mean, as we've seen from Johnny in the past, he just is unaware. Like, I really don't think he thinks he's doing anything wrong by taking over jobs that Roland would do. I think he is like trying to occupy his day. And on it, I think it might even be the opposite in that he's like, I'm doing so much for the motel right now. Like, I'm so productive. I'm getting so much done. I don't think he's even aware, even after they talked to him. I think he is like so filled with trying to make his days full. And so that he's exhausted when he goes to bed. So he's not like, you know, where's Moira? Not next to me right now. You know, I think like that's what's going on. I think he's just so completely unaware. And like, sure, that's a faux pas. Like that is on him for not realizing that you're doing someone else's job. Therefore, you are taking away his hours. Presumably he's paid hourly. Like he's not going to be making the money he needs to make. He has a newborn. Like all those things can be accurate. It's something about, and also the other thing that Johnny has going for him this episode that I really clung on to is, if not for Johnny having this pep talk with Moira, I don't know what she does. Like, I don't know that she kind of is able to rally and do what she does. I think it's Johnny being like, this could be it. Like, this could be your moment. Like, you should make the most of it. Like, you have a couple options, but like, one of them is pushing forward and trying to do your best. And I really appreciated that from Johnny because it can be difficult to like be away from your partner and not have them there to like pump you up when you need it. And so I think this episode for me really showed how great Moira and Johnny's relationship is and how stable they are. And that like, I don't know that this is something we see a ton of times on TV, Stuart, especially in a sitcom. Most of the time you're going to go like, oh, my husband is so stupid. Like that's what you're going to get. You're not going to get this like really lovely stuff from this couple of like, they're stronger together than they are apart. And I feel like this episode really showcases that.
It really, it does. And don't get me wrong. Like I'm ragging on Johnny because of like how he behaves when he's like going through the setup of obviously setting it up so that he's given the opportunity to like try and convince Moira to come home, but he doesn't. He like convinced her to stay and to see it out and to make the most of it and to like kind of, and he does a really good job of like bolstering it up. And we wouldn't get that had he not gone through all the stuff before. I just find the stuff before quite annoying to the point where I'm like, unforgivable, unforgivable, Johnny. But it is, I will say, it is refreshing to see a relationship like theirs, which is so solid, so grounded. And again, like, it is adorable. I am going to have to admit that, like, I do kind of like it when they are very sweet together and stuff. Individually, makes me sick, but together it's really lovely, I guess. But it is refreshing to see it, like, being portrayed, because we don't get anything much like that. Like you said, it does get very tropey otherwise.
It feels very like, I'm trying to pick on, you know, these shows by saying this, but it's very like Family Guy, The Simpsons, like any network sitcom where the husband's a bit of a dumb ass. I don't know, like a bit of an idiot, bumbling. And the wife is the one who's always like picking up the pieces, right? Like, I feel like that is so common that it's really refreshing to see something different, even if Johnny's still a little bit bumbling. They do it in a different way, which I liked. And again, I also really liked that we get Stevie being the one to be like, listen, I know you really miss Moira, and like, it must be really difficult, but also you need to stop taking Roland's jobs. Please, you need to stop.
Honestly, if it weren't for Stevie in this whole situation, like, it could have gone so much worse. And Stevie's just, I do love the fact that we get a furthering of Stevie and Johnny's relationship. I've just, not just being business partners and like growing to know each other a bit better, but like, I guess transcending that kind of like vibe between colleagues of just like, she gets him more now.
Exactly.
She sees what's happening almost immediately. And she kind of knows how to address it really in such a way that it doesn't really kind of, she goes a bit light at first, but then admittedly like has to like just tell a home truth, and in doing so gets through to him and stuff. So yeah, I mean, shout out for Stevie for that. But the coffee,
yeah.
How did they not notice the coffee was that bad for that long?
The thing is, it doesn't make sense to me to like invest in baked goods as like brunchy whatevers and not invest in like a coffee pot, which costs like $20. Yeah. Like, you could find a cheap enough coffee pot, especially the one they were using. Like, it's not hard to make an okay cup of coffee. We're not asking for them to have like, you know, a cappuccino machine, but to make an okay cup of coffee is not difficult. So it's wild to me that none of them have made the effort, because you're telling me none of these people drink coffee in the morning? What are they doing? How are they living?
Maybe, I mean, Moira has tea. Maybe she's sending off Johnny in the morning with a nice cup of tea. Maybe
your tea,
if that is happening,
propaganda.
If I can headcanon that, then maybe Johnny is going to go up a couple of points.
You and your tea propaganda. Listen, I don't know. You know, obviously this is Canada, not the United States, but a lot of my Canadian friends have said they kind of like, you know, a lot of the culture goes up north, and I have to imagine most Canadians wake up and drink a cup of coffee rather than a cup of tea in the mornings.
Possibly. You're all obsessed with it over there. Like, I don't get that. It smells lovely, but it's just, yeah, not for me.
Yeah. What do you mean? My brain just stopped working.
It's too bitter. It's too bitter. And then you're gonna say, oh, you should have lots of milk and sugar in it. No. Why?
No. Make it sweeter. What do you mean to make it sweeter?
No, just have tea. Tea
flavors.
Is wonderful.
You could throw flavors in there. Hazelnut, vanilla.
Oh, caramel. No, because then you just get like high fructose corn syrup, like syrupy things, and it's just so synthetic and wrong. No, get out. Leave me alone. Leave me with my cup of tea.
So upsetting. Anyway.
Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this? A movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.
Anyway, let's talk about Moira while we're on the subject. I just want to know your thoughts, all your thoughts, Stuart, on this from Moira.
It was everything I hoped it would be in terms of this, because of course Moira is going to go all in on a role. And I love that Moira in this whole situation, like, she does rewrites, and then she goes into it enthusiastically, gets smacked down by the director and finding out that he's just like, doesn't care. And is just there to like get a paycheck to go to Bora Bora. And yet she still persists, admittedly, with a bit of help from Johnny, and persists and does substantial rewrites. Like, there were so many post-its in that script that she had, and it goes down well. Like, this is the Moira I want to see. This is Moira thriving in what she does best. Like, because we've seen her apply herself to the Jazzer Gals, and that's gone okay. We've seen her apply herself to town council. That's been a bit all over the place, really. Like, she's had some good moments, she's had some bad moments. But this is like, this is why she's an actress, because she has the self-awareness to know that it's crap. She knows that the soap that she was in was just awful, but still it was number one, and she takes pride in it. And I love that she applied that to this film. I love that she kind of pushed that through. And I don't know, it looked bonkers at the end, but I haven't seen it with the full special effects. I haven't seen it edited. It could be a masterpiece. I like to think it is.
Yeah. I think the thing is that this sort of like a schlocky horror movie feels kind of perfect for Moira to be involved with, you know, mm-hmm. because it's almost like, oh no, she could be extra. She could be a little out there. And it almost plays to her benefit to do something like that in this sort of a film. I think she's like the perfect person. And she's the one who's willing to take the time and energy and all this other stuff to do some script rewrites, right? Like, it feels exactly in her wheelhouse. And it's also attainable for her. You know what I mean? I think she'd have a really tough time trying to go for something super big, but this is like a step in the right direction. And she's also kind of lucky that she's working with this sort of a director who's like, it seems like he does have what it takes. And this is just like a side project to get him more money. So like, you know, things could work out for her benefit. I really liked getting to see this specific side of Moira, because when she's passionate about something, when she cares about something, she will put her heart and soul into it, very much like Alexis in that way. I think Alexis mm-hmm. kind of gets that from Moira, that she does put all her effort into this if she cares about it. And she seems to. She seems to actually care about this, unlike the director. And she's just weird enough to like pull this sort of a thing off. Like, it's so fun. I also imagine, Stuart, that she was very invested in like the hair and makeup team getting her look right. Because this feels like also only a look that Moira could pull off. I really love this storyline for Moira, because it's when I feel like the thing we've kind of learned is that the roses are stronger together than they are apart. And so having Johnny be able to give her that little bit of a pep talk over the phone, and then Moira kind of take that. And obviously all of this is like me headcanoning stuff, but like, I also like to imagine, Stuart, that in Moira's head, she's like, well, Alexis has her job going for her and she's trying so hard, and David has the apothecary, even if there's no customers in it. And, you know, and she's thinking about her kids and all the hard work they're putting in and possibly taking some inspiration from that.
Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that she does. It's not only the inspiration from them, but like for the work itself, but like the inspiration in being like proud of the work that you're producing as well. Like, it's one thing to just go out and cut a paycheck and stuff, but like, Moira seems to really kind of like take pride in everything that she has. Like, it took a while with the Jazzy Girls to like find a sense of pride in that, but like, she found a sense of like community in it. Town like councilship, I think she's found some pride in that, and she's applying that same thing into this. And it certainly is, I think, an influence from the kids in what they've done, which is great. I love the fact that they're all finding their ways for this to work in this world. And of course, like, I think the really cool thing is that it's only Moira's eye that could have made this work, because she, like you say, is just kind of kooky enough to see those things. Like, when he goes oh, I think we know that the script's a dumpster fire, and she's like, I don't think we would have signed on if that was the case.
It's a
timely allegory on prejudice. Like, and he's just like confused by that, but of course she sees it as that, because she's like reading further into it, because it means so much more to her as well,
right?
It's so great how she's just taking a lemon and has made lemonade.
She's leaning in, and this I don't know, like, there are so many films that probably aren't objectively masterpieces or, you know, objectively great in any particular way, but they're cult classics because mm-hmm. of how cheesy or whatever they are. And it feels like at the worst, maybe it ends up being nothing, but at the best, maybe we fix some of the script problems and we make this into something people enjoy.
Do you know what I'm getting the vibe of? Hot Frosty. This is just Hot Frosty all over again.
And Moira equals Hot Frosty.
is Gretchen Wieners, because they all know it's a trash film. They know that it's like low budget, it's hokey, it's like kind of really tropey and silly, and like it's not an art house piece. It's not going to get nominated for like any Oscars and stuff, but it's going to entertain people. And yet they lean into it, they go into it with not a sense of like, oh, I'm so important, I'm like acting on this. And like, because being a watcher of Schitt's Creek now, Hot Frosty, big thing for us, right? And so I devoured every bit of interview and like behind the scenes thing that I could have around the whole thing. And they had a whale of a time making it by the looks of it, because they kind of just embraced it for what it was. And I think that like Moira is elevating it a little bit, but is also kind of just recognizing that you can have something that, like with what she said about the soap, is that like you can have something that isn't the greatest piece of media in the world, but it's gonna be good. Like it's gonna be good at what it is.
Exactly. It knows what it is. Yeah.
Which is why she hams up the performance completely, puts on the ridiculous voice, which
so funny.
Did Catherine O'Hara come up with the voice after this was prompted, or did the voice come about before and then they wrote it in? Because there's no way, like, what is the chicken and egg situation going on here? Because I don't understand how you can come up with that voice after the fact. Like, surely that's got to be something that just naturally comes to you, right?
I feel like you're just like, Catherine O'Hara can do anything. You know what I mean? Like, possibly, at this point, it's like, honestly, I kind of feel like it's a situation of, I'm blanking on the name of the, why am I blanking on the name of the like most famous actress of all time? So they're like, Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep can play anything. At this point, I'm kind of thinking that like Catherine O'Hara is like, when they're writing, when the Levies are writing for her, they're kind of like, she'll be able to do anything. So let's just let's see what she can do with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's going to be such a great like thing for a writer's room, to be able to have that much confidence in who you're writing for. And to, again, it's a benefit of obviously Eugene and Catherine going back for so long and like knowing each other so well, is that they know fully what is going to work and what isn't going to work and like what they're going to thrive in. And it was great. So, so, so great. Disappointing that we obviously didn't get much face-to-face time with them, and it was very much like Catherine O'Hara off on her own doing a little side quest. Yeah. We got a phone call, but it's not the same.
It's kind of just has to happen, though. Like, there's really no other way to realistically do it. But still so fun. And yes, we will be talking about the outfit. That is going to be in our Moira wig watch today. But before we get into the feedback, I did have to mention one last thing, and it is that we find out Roland and Jocelyn play strip backgammon, which we knew they already played strip canasta. So now are they now playing two different strip games a week, or have they just like gotten tired of canasta and have shifted to backgammon?
I like to think both. At least in the lead up to Baby Sprinkle, like something must have led to that. Like, you know, these two are the best and also the worst. Like, we talk about like the solid foundation of Moira and Johnny's relationship. I kind of love the solid foundation of Roland and Jocelyn.
It's the most redeeming aspect of Roland. Yeah. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. How can you not want to just jump him?
Jeez.
I'll never forgive Jocelyn for that line.
no, definitely not. All right, let's get into some feedback here. One of my favorite pieces of feedback we've literally ever gotten, I think, is from Aaron, who says, Stuart,
I'm glad you like it.
Stuart, I think you could be a thimble kind of guy. Referring to, of course, Patrick's rubber thimbles that he uses to help him turn pages quicker.
Yeah, I purposely have not made reference to the thimbles, because I didn't want to get this label of being a thimble kind of guy. Outrageous. I don't know where this has come from. Erin, I feel like shots have been fired. How do I ban someone from listening to a podcast, Jess? Where do I go in the settings to set this up? This is outrageous.
So you're not the kind of guy who puts on the rubber finger covers to flip pages?
I don't know. There is utility to them, so perhaps. I don't know.
Did you ever meet those people who like lick their fingers before they touch pages to like help them flip them?
Oh, that's the worst.
Isn't that disgusting? Yeah. That ages so poorly now. I feel like it's like, stop.
I had to take
a little longer to flip the page. It's fine. Shop,
they would do it with money. And I was just
money
like,
is the grossest thing. Like,
but they would like with their finger touch the money, then lick and then touch more money. I was like, you don't know what germ has been taken from the money and put into your mouth. And then
where do you think that money has been?
Money.
Drugs?
Yeah.
Strippers?
Maybe that's why they're doing it. Maybe they're getting like a mild little like contact high from all the drugs. Ooh, that's left
I think
them.
There was coke on here 6 years ago. Erin, I loved this comment. I feel like it's maybe your Britishness that gives that off, that like British people just like a thimble. Like, it just feels like a British
given
thing.
A thimble. Like, it's not like we come out of the womb and they're like, right, here's a cup of tea and a thimble, go nuts, enjoy, conquer the world. Like, I don't think that's how it quite works, Jess.
That's exactly how it works. That's exactly every time a British baby is born, they get their thimble. I love it so much. And I love that I don't read as a thimble person, because I'm reading like the opposite of what the sentence implies as well. It's that you give thimble energy and I don't, which I love.
This is outrageous. In a former life, you worked in insurance, Jess. Like, of all people to be a thimble person, it would be you.
I like to live dangerously with my fingers. I just give off dangerous energy.
Dangerous energy, says the indoor kid that won't go out on a like an outdoor adventure for their company.
I didn't like it.
I am
this is the best.
So infuriated.
Yeah. Stuart thimble person confirmed. We also got an email from Sive. Which I'm not going to read out in its entirety because it's a lot, but with like really fun recommendations for like what we could do after we finish the show, with like there's bloopers, deleted scenes, behind the scenes. So shout out to Sive for putting in the work, because this was one of the most thorough emails I've ever received.
It's funny because like I keep an eye on the email inbox, and ordinarily I just copy and paste my Jess. And when I copied and pasted this one, I was like, copy and paste, scroll, 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 scroll. I was like, this is a beefy email.
Yeah.
But, like, the recommendations for like the bloopers or the extended scenes and stuff, I was like, I'm here for that. I would love to know what is ever left on the cutting room floor, because the show is fantastic. So like, what do you cut out from it? Like, has it been some hidden gems? Like, is it just, does Dan Levy write some duds? Who knows?
Who knows? Might get into that. Maybe we'll find out. Okay, so that's all the feedback that we have. So that means it's time to do our ratings of the Simply the Best and Disgruntled Pelican. I feel like there are some options here today. Stuart, I'm going to start with you. Who's Simply the Best this episode?
I thought the Simply the Best was really tough, because for me, it's between two. And I think that had it not been for this being such an iconic episode for one character in particular, I feel like the other one would have had it otherwise. Moira's getting it for me, but I'm going to say Stevie was robbed.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I also had it between two people. And here's the situation.
No.
What? You can't just protest. I'm not even done. And you're protesting.
I can. I will protest. You're about to say the J word.
The J word. Here's the thing. I agree with you about Moira. And I had said to myself, if Stuart gives his Simply the Best point to anyone but Moira, I will give it to Moira. Because I do think she does like incredible work this episode on many fronts. Catherine O'Hara also obviously like should be getting the Simply the Best point just for her work as Moira.
Mm-hmm.
But I really loved what Johnny did. Like, and I know he did some bad stuff in terms of taking Roland's work, but he was so sweet. And he's the one who gave Moira the pep talk that like shifted her mindset and got her in gear. And I just loved that from him. So I'm giving it to Johnny. And I know it's going to be controversial with you, but I don't care.
What is this hidden immunity idol like MVP voting BS? You have just, on a contingency, played something based on my vote. This is outrageous.
Yeah.
And there will be repercussions.
Yeah.
You best be going first on the next one.
I will. Fine. I will. I'm going to before I give out my disgruntled Pelican point, I do want to give an honorable mention. Because there was something that was so heinous this episode that I was so tempted to give this person a disgruntled Pelican point because I was so offended. And I just need to call out one character in particular and say, Twyla, get some travel soup cups. What the hell is wrong with you? You can't give someone soup in a Ziploc baggie and then offer them a straw. Like, this is just unacceptable. You work in a diner. Get some travel cups.
No. She gave a choice. He took the straw. Like, what, there was she,
why did she put the soup in a bag? Why did she put the soup in a bag?
It was ridiculous. She double bagged it at least.
Good job, Twyla. So that was my honorary mention. I don't seriously want to give her a disgruntled Pelican point, but I will give her an honorary mention disgruntled Pelican point because giving someone soup in a bag is fucking unhinged.
It was. It looked so horrible as well.
It looked so gross. How do you even open it and eat it? It's ridiculous.
Outrageous.
But my real disgruntled Pelican point is going to go to Alexis because I can't with the babes. I can't with the babes. I can't with the tricking David. I can't with all of this. I was so annoyed with her up until she apologizes. And even then I was like, you just put David through so much just because you're like, my relationship's better than yours. Ooh, babe. Look at me, babe. Stop it. I'm done with it. Alexis, disgruntled Pelican point for you.
That is outrageous. I'm a little stuck because I don't want to give it to Johnny. Like, I've racked on him, but
you shouldn't want to give it to Johnny.
He did a nice thing. I think that the two evened them out, and Johnny's like a flat zero.
Okay.
Twyla was in contention for the bag.
It's horrible. What is wrong with somebody? You just soup in a bag.
I'm going to say Patrick is in contention as well for the thimble. I've got to distance myself from this thimble kind of guy, like label.
How actually dare you?
And, hey, I told you there would be repercussions.
This feels antagonistic.
It does. It does. Because it's intended to be. Mm-hmm. I'm desperately trying not to do this. I think I have to give it to Alexis as well. And
I'm so
outraged that I am.
Oh, also doesn't she say to David, you look like a mushroom. What does she call him when he has his little helmet on?
A little toadstool.
She's like so, so awful.
Yeah, this is peak Alexis not being thoughtful or caring. It was such a non-serious situation. I don't think she thinks that she's doing real damage to David and Patrick's relationship by suggesting that they need a generator.
It's
silly sibling stuff.
But yeah, she knows what she's doing to David because she knows he has anxious brain.
Yeah, and in comparison to everyone else in the episode, I mean, it probably is the worst thing that's happened, I guess. But it's not
besides the soup bag. That was so awful.
You keep mentioning the soup bag. I'm tempted to change it. To give it to Twyla. I can't give a point to Twyla. That would be awful.
All right. Well, now it's time for Wig Watch, of course. And we have a couple different things we have to discuss. I want to start chronologically. So can we please discuss
my favorite opening scene ever? While Johnny was absolutely being the worst, Alexis, David, and Stevie were being the best by trying them all on. It was the funniest thing, and I don't know why it's taken 5 seasons for us to get this.
I also love Moira not knowing whose voice is whose. Just made me so happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, oh, Alexis, you've got strep again.
And then shading David in the process. Yeah, mm-hmm. Alexis is wearing this like very long red wig. I don't know what it looks kind of horrifying. Like that, it looks dry and bad. I don't know.
I mean, so fans of Drag Race, or at least Drag Race media, like that goes beyond the show, Bob the Drag Queen had an awful wig that they wore for the Pit Stop, which is like a YouTube interview series. Mm-hmm. This looks a little bit like that really awful wig that they wore out of spite to like annoy the fans. I'm thinking that's what that reminds me of. David reminds me of that one that Dwight wears in The Office where he does the whole turn look thing.
Oh, the Meredith wig, but it's blonde. Yeah, Meredith wig, make it blonde.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I'm
that's
with
giving
on
me that vibe. And then, is Stevie wearing the excited beyond compare wig at one point? Like, I'm pretty sure she wears it. It's putting flat on.
I forgot to get grab a photo of that one, but yes, she does wear that one. Mm-hmm. I forgot it wasn't just the two kids and that Stevie was involved as well. But yes, she does. So great. It's all ridiculous.
Yeah, and I love the fact that Johnny was like, oh yeah, you better remember what pins they came from. Your mother keeps a spreadsheet.
Of course she does.
The one thing that she does that is somewhat like work is to do with the wigs.
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. So absolutely incredible. And then, of course, the star of the show, Moira Rose herself.
Iconic. The wig, the prosthetics, the feathers. I have no notes. This is perfection. Of all the slander we've given to the wig team for a lack of wigs in many episodes, this redeems all of it.
I especially love the nose, like the little prosthetic nosy beak thing.
Like a little beaky thing, yeah.
I love it so much. The wig is incredible. The makeup is incredible. Like every aspect of this is incredible. 10 out of 10, my favorite look she's had. I know it's ridiculous as it's supposed to be, but absolutely my favorite. Yeah, it's perfect. Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what I think Dr. Clara Beatrice Mandrake would look like.
Exactly. Exactly what she would look like. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Wig Watch was fully wig watching today. And it was just the best. The wigs were wigging. The wigs were wigging. Which brings us into the final thing we have to do today, which is we have to decide where we want this to be on our tier list, because we got a brand new tier list. Baby.
Oh, no. This as is a reminder, the worst part.
As a reminder, we have Hot Shit, Full Bouquet, Love That Journey for Me, Ew David, and Shit Out of Luck. So, Stuart, where do you think the crowning belongs?
This is always the toughest job because this sets the bar for the remainder of the series. Season, even. Sorry, I went very British there.
Yeah. It's okay. I know you're wearing your thimbles today, so you can't help it.
How dare you? Look at the video. There is no thimble on my hand. I just said, like, frantically taking
just flesh. I was going to say they're flesh-colored thimbles.
How dare you? It's outrageous. Part of me wants to hedge my bets. I think that this was a solid episode. I think Full Bouquet would kind of do that in a very kind of safe way. But I also think that it really did fire on all cylinders. And I do think there's a justification for it to be in Hot Shit.
I felt similarly. I'm like, it either is I know there's nothing on the spreadsheet, nothing on the tier list currently, but it's like low Hot Shit, high Full Bouquet for me. But I also am with you. It's like, it's tough to want to put it in Hot Shit because it's the first episode of the season. Like, it's like, that's making a statement. But
it's iconic.
That's what I'm
saying.
I feel like we could argue that the Moira Crow moment makes it iconic enough where, like, similar to the Simply the Best open mic night moment, like, I think that kind of just propels it. And the rest of the storylines, right? Like, let's face it, I really love the Johnny storyline. The Alexis and David stuff is very funny and involves both couples, which is also really fun and interesting. We have the Stevie and Johnny dynamic, which is lovely. Moira being Moira in, like, the best way possible that actually helps her, not hurts her.
We had Roland not even in contention for LVP.
Massive start huge, for Roland.
Huge episode.
Yeah. So yeah, let's do Hot Shit. This is our podcast. We can do whatever the hell we want. So that's where it's going. Really?
We can? Oh my gosh, yes.
So yeah, that's where this episode is going to go, into Hot Shit, where it deserves to be, Stuart.
Yes. So happy about this.
All right, well.
Starting off so strong.
We really are. Let's talk about the title of next episode. And yes. I want to know what you think this is about. It's called Season 5, Episode 2, Love Letters.
Love Letters. Are we going to find some? Maybe Ted and Alexis, they really like kind of, they're really embracing this whole, oh, we're in a new relationship, and maybe they're going to write mushy love letters to each other. And David will find them, read them, and it'll be embarrassing. Maybe. Or maybe there'll be love letters to someone that we don't expect. Maybe there'll be a mystery involved. Maybe Twyla's receiving some.
Oh, like a secret admirer sort of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe okay, that's fun. Well, I don't
know. Lots to speculate on.
We'll see you next week. I'm really excited, Stuart. I want to give you a little bit of a teaser here. There is an episode this season that has a moment that I have been waiting for you to get to since we started the podcast.
So, mid-season, right?
About mid-season is where
I don't want to wait this long.
Yeah.
I just binge them all now and just pretend.
There is a storyline this season that I think will be one of your favorites of the entire series also.
Bold claim. We'll see. Bold,
but I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. Just leaving everyone with some teasers there. Mm. But make sure you're sending in feedback, talking shit everywhere, writing 5-star reviews because we always appreciate them. And listen, you want to roast us on them? I will read the roast on the podcast. Yeah. Say whatever you want.
If you're jumping in just for season 5 and it's maybe this is your first episode listening, any 5-star reviews, we read them out verbatim.
Yep. Everything say what you say. Want. Call one of us a thimble wearer. I want to know who's the thimble wearer on this podcast. Let us know.
Yeah.
In the 5-star review.
And also, if you are on a hike, sorry.
If you're on a hike, I hope you're enjoying the views of your totally real, not fake hike. You're definitely not just walking because hiking involves more than walking. Obviously, it's definitely not just walking. Anyway, that's all we have for this week. So we'll be back next week with season 5, episode 2. Until then, warmest regards.
And best wishes.
Tweet us on Facebook or leave us a review and you say, yeah. Okay, I think I will.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.